Welcome to the Quartering Podcast for Monday, the 9th of May. First up, Jeremy discusses Elon Musk having his life threatened on Twitter over Starlink and Mr. Beast will take over.
Elon Musk appears to maybe not have a legitimate chance of not surviving it after, apparently he's rustled some jimmies over sending his Starlink internet satellites over to Ukraine, and now he has sent some cryptic tweets about if he passes away under unknown or mysterious circumstances, it's been nice knowing you. He's also, of course, taking the time to promise Twitter to Mr. Beast should that happen. Now, Elon Musk says he may pass under mysterious circumstances in a cryptic tweet. Elon Musk suggested that this would happen after referring to a threat by the chief of Russia's space agency. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO posted the ominous tweet shortly after he shared a message from Dmitry Rogozin, who accused him of being involved in supplying fascist forces in Ukraine with military communication equipment. And for this, Elon, you will be held accountable like an adult, no matter how much you play the fool, added the former deputy Russian prime minister, who now heads the country's space agency. In February, Musk provided SpaceX Starlink terminals to Ukraine at the request of top government officials who worried that the country would lose internet access due to the attacks. Rogozin blasted Starlink on Sunday for enabling the bad guys from WW2, Azov Battalion, access to the internet. From the testimony of the captured commander in the 35th Marine Brigades of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, Colonel Dmitry Kormyankov, turns out that the internet terminals of Elon Musk's Starlink satellite company were delivered to the militants of this battalion and Ukrainian Marines in Mariupol by military helicopters, according to the translated tweet Musk shared. According to our information, the delivery of the Starlink equipment was carried out by the Pentagon, he wrote. Elon Musk thus is involved in supplying fascist forces in Ukraine with military communications equipment. Musk wrote that the word doesn't mean what he seems to think it does. Russia has repeatedly cited this battalion as part of, you know, all this stuff like that. Now, Musk's tweet prompted his mother, May Musk, to respond, "That's not funny. Sorry, I'll do my best to stay alive," her son assured her. Some Twitter users drew comparison between Musk's tweet and, of course, McAfee back in 2021. "I am content here. I have friends. The food is good." You know, all this kind of stuff. Well, what started it was this tweet. Now, I don't see if they've responded, but their tweets are protected. I wonder why. Elon says this. He sent this to the Russian media, then translated it below. It's actually insane. Like, and they immediately protected their tweets. It is concerning, to say the least, that now it's just some dude chirping on the internet, essentially, but it's different. You know, you don't know. And maybe they seriously take this, you know, very serious. He also points out in the conversation that Mr. Beast can have the keys to Twitter if something happens. Even though he's got his hands full of Tesla, SpaceX, and the Boring Company, business magnate Elon Musk has managed to ingrain himself in internet culture with his regular Twitter post. While the deal for Twitter has yet to go through, Musk has laid out some plans that he has in mind to take Twitter up a notch. However, if a cruel fate befalls him, he's already agreed to turn things over to Mr. Beast. The billionaire and YouTube sensation have struck up quite the relationship on Twitter, regularly tweeting each other back and forth. On May 9th, the pair once again shared an online exchange after Musk tweeted a pretty morbid but joking statement. "If I pass under mysterious circumstances, it's been nice knowing you." Mr. Beast didn't miss a beat, asking if he could take over Twitter if the worst does happen. After a few hours, the 50-year-old responded with a simple, "Okay." Plenty of fans joked that as a result of the tweet, Mr. Beast might be the one to plot Musk's downfall, but that would probably contradict the mysterious circumstances part of the billionaire's post. I mean, it is bizarre. You see Tim Young, wait, what do you know about Hillary? You see this guy, Muhammad, writing, you know, you won't die before your day, Elon. Anyway, you were a unique figure in the world. I'm only wondering one thing. As a genius, haven't you found out that there's a great creator in this world yet? If you did, make sure you confess it before your last heartbeat. Bless you. Elon replies, thank you for your blessing, but I'm okay going south if that is indeed my destination, since the vast majority of all humans ever born will be there. Mr. Beast, you know, if that happens, can I have Twitter? Elon writing, okay. It's a little bizarre. You could see this next to my Coca-Cola. You could see Edip. This person, well, you can't buy time, Elon. You will die like everyone and go to your Lord. Life on this planet is like, what? Like, forcing religion on him, I guess, is a thing. You know, it's kind of a joke, but obviously not really a joke. You know, that's bizarre to me. And as Jeff Bezos's little attack dog, the Washington Post, continues to make sure they publish endless hit pieces, they write, she's in charge of Twitter safety. Her days there may be numbered. Vijaya Gadde came reluctantly to the decision that cemented her reputation on the right as Twitter's chief censor. For years, the company's top lawyer had resisted calls to ban then-President Donald Trump from his favorite social media platform. Even after the worst day in American history ever, Gadde explained that during an emotional virtual company town hall on January 8th, that he hadn't broken enough of Twitter's rules against the glorification of bad behavior to merit a permanent ban of his account. 3 hours later, after her team produced evidence that Trump's latest tweets had sparked other bad behavior, she relented. According to two people familiar with the matter who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe the internal discussions, she reached then-CEO Jack Dorsey in French Polynesia, and they agreed to lower the boom. The ban of Trump, which continues to this day, is the most prominent example of a deeply polarizing decision that led conservatives to claim Twitter, accused Twitter of political censorship. As billionaire Elon Musk, a self-declared free speech absolutist, seeks to acquire the social network, these decisions, as Gadde herself, are coming under fresh scrutiny. Critics have derided her as Twitter's top censorship advocate, a barb amplified by Musk, who tweeted the meme photo of Gadde with that cast her as an icon of Twitter's left-wing bias. Musk's legions of followers have tweeted calls for her firing, some of them racist. Twitter colleagues describe her work as difficult but necessary and unmotivated by political ideology. Oh, of course it's motivated by political ideology. Defenders say her team, known as the Trust and Safety Organization, has worked painstakingly to rein in coof misinformation, bullying, and other harmful speech on the site, moves that necessarily limit some forms of expression. They have also disproportionately affected right-leaning accounts. But Vijaya also tried to balance the desire to protect users with the values of the company built on the principle of radical free speech, she said. She pioneered strategies for flagging harmful content without removing it, adopting warning labels as interstitials, which cover up a tweet that break Twitter's rules and give people control over what content they see. Strategies copied by Twitter's much larger rival, Facebook. Facebook is not a rival for Twitter. This whole argument of trying to humanize this person, she gets paid $17 million a year, you know, and refuses to acknowledge shadow bans, which obviously exist, refuses to acknowledge that political bias exists on Twitter, which of course it does. And all of this stuff, I mean, her gravy train is going to end, it's going to end as soon as Elon takes over. And this, by the way, after they locked their account, Elon says, seriously, how tough are you if you can't handle 280 characters of criticism? This after the Russian threatened him. I missed that tweet originally. Well, hopefully Elon ramps up some level of security. You know, you just never know. And he must be protected at all costs.
And next up, Amber Heard gets trolled in a hilarious way. And amazing news for Johnny Depp.
Well, in the battle of the headlines, certainly this week was at least a counterpunch. Look, I know that people get really angry when I, you know, I have to be very careful how I word things. Look, again, I will remind people, I believe that Johnny Depp was defamed, and I hope he wins the lawsuit. And Amber seems like just the definition of awful. Okay, so we're all on the same page there, all right? Last week, I talked about, and you know, some people really didn't like hearing this, but I try to remain objective. In the battle of headlines, Amber had a nice counterpunch last week. Now, if you're watching the trial and you're saying, nobody believed that, blah, okay, maybe. Okay, maybe. Maybe I'm the only one that could look at 100 out of 100 headlines being pro-Amber and think that that was probably good for her. Maybe I'm just a simp. But now there's a week off in which I think, and according to several experts, this is going to be very bad for her because the prosecution, or well, Johnny's team, is going to have a lot of time to pick apart what has already appeared to be several, and I mean several, holes in her story. Let's start with maybe the most hilarious. Someone let one rip on the stand during the Johnny Amber trial, and there's video. Yes, there is video. Now, I don't know, you know, this will start with a bit of a meme, you know. There are people in this world, two types of people in this world. Liars who deny they're the one who supplied, and heroes who immediately own up to the crime. Let the record show, a woman testifying in the Johnny Amber event is a member of the second group. She let out a rager while on the witness stand in court the other day and immediately owned up to it. The rip and subsequent admission was a welcome moment of levity in the trial that has featured a lot of finger pointing. Let's take a look here. Let's take a look at the video.
And can you just describe for those of us who have no idea, myself, what does Arnica Cream look like?
White emollient.
That sounds fake. Is that fake? That sounds fake. That's like the typical like whoopee cushion sound effect. I don't know. We'll see Johnny's face. TikTok is full of like misedited stuff. Let's see.
Can you just describe for?
Let's see. Hold on.
No idea.
Hold on.
What does Arnica Cream look like?
It's kind of like a white.
Nobody even smiled. That can't be real. It sounds like very cartoony. I hope it's real. The world needs this to be real. But now some old interviews resurfaced that contradict her sworn testimony. And now we're into more serious trouble. Either Amber suffers from memory loss or her legal team is actually feeding her a fake script to benefit her against Johnny. In the trial, on their initial statement, Amber described not really knowing anything about Johnny before meeting him on the set of The Rum Diary. However, new evidence suggests that the exact opposite and confirms Johnny's own statement about how they met. For Johnny, he recalls Amber as a flat-out groupie of his, as she constantly flattered him with references and compliments. That's what made him fall in love with her. Well, that was easy. During the production, in an old interview, Amber talks about how much she reveres him. Interesting. And this is the kind of stuff like the internet. If you don't think that Johnny's team has like people who are literally following these TikTokers and following like Nick's stream, following Twitter accounts, following YouTube accounts, they do. Because like a lot of them are doing a lot of the hard work for them. The initial statement about Johnny on the trial, she brushed off knowing him before getting the role. Take a look at how she gushed about him after getting a chance to share the screen with him after such an iconic character. It's clear she had a mild obsession about him, but she suddenly forgot. The two sides of Amber's stories don't match each other. Now, maybe she was lying here and I don't, and she was pretending to care. I don't know. And then of course the internet ran wild, being 100% sure that, you know, old AMB took a bump while she was blowing her nose. I didn't believe that, you know, again, people are so like desperate to believe everything negative about her is absolute fact. It's dangerous. It makes people mad. It makes people unsubscribe to me. I just like, look, why not? Why stretch? So much of what we know to be factual is bad. I just think it's a bad look to be like, oh yeah, she's definitely taking a bump there. Like, I get, maybe it's unlikely. Like, usually when you blow your nose, you know, you might do a little at the end. I don't know.
Mental condition.
Why would people think that that's, I mean, like, here's the thing. She didn't take the tissue from a box. It was in her hands. However, we'll analyze the situation later. I don't know. I mean, like, again, I don't know exactly, you know, it doesn't look like it to me. But another hilarious, excuse me, kitty. Cut your nails, Colt. Sorry, my cat's crawling around on me. Over the weekend, some internet sleuths sent me this in screenshots of it, and I was like, oh, this is probably fake. There's so much fake stuff floating around. But now it turns out it's real. The IMDb page ends up reading, well, a different spelling of her last name. Now, the change was reflected in Google. This is a Google search out, like, if you search her name, it actually read, like, the last name was spelled T-U-R-D instead. Of course, a reference to the gift that was left in the bed. So, people, I mean, look, I think it's pretty clear, regardless of the outcome, like, I mean, the money that's getting spent is obviously not insignificant. But regardless of the outcome, I think Johnny has won in that, you know, in the court of public opinion, this woman is tainted. Everywhere she goes, every job she works on for the rest of her life will get just barraged with negative press and negative reviews and things of that nature. If that's what he was hoping, you know, I think he's accomplished that at this point. Whether or not he'll actually win the lawsuit and win $50 million from her, I don't know. Is it just her? Do you also go after the ACLU, which now we know was kind of colluding with her? You have this, but here's some really good news for Johnny. There's a week-long break in the trial gives his team advantages in cross, expert says. Johnny's trial is scheduled on a week-long break after the world listened to a parade of witnesses, including Amber, in the past 10 days. Yeah, nobody had any information about that. The other trial in New York that was far more important. But anyway, Johnny's trying to prove to a jury, blah, blah, blah. Johnny's case is no layup for his legal team, according to leading entertainment attorney Daniel Gutenplan. It's kind of a good name if you sell consulting. Has represented clients on both sides of high-profile defamation cases. He attends Johnny still has an uphill battle to win his case and secure $50 million judgment he is seeking. As most defamation plaintiffs have, Johnny and his team have an uphill battle and have a challenge in proving the case because they have to prove, first of all, that anything that was said in the op-ed and testimony is completely false, the media entertainment IP lawyer told Fox News Digital. The Washington Post piece in question, of course, doesn't mention him by name, although his camp will argue, and I think it's a compelling argument, that a reasonable reader will assume that the article is written about Johnny. And I agree with there. I think if I'm on the jury, I buy that too. But of course, it doesn't just not mention him. It also does not mention any specific instances of bad behavior or events. So it doesn't say on this date and time, this thing happened. So it'll be difficult to like disprove that kind of stuff. However, Gutenplan, who is not involved in the proceedings in Fairfax, Virginia, maintained that the week-long adjournment couldn't have come at a better time for Johnny, and his legal team will be given the wild details that have emerged, it gives his team a full week to prepare its cross-examination. And they're going to be able to poke like a zillion holes in her story. They're going to poke every little hole in their testimony they can, and they're going to try and create so many inconsistencies that they're going to tell the jury, if she can lie to you and misrepresent or change her story in these small ways, then the entire testimony is polluted. You can't possibly believe any of it. Johnny from the offset expressed that he's only bringing the $50 million defamation cases against his ex to clear his name and recoup potential earnings he feels he lost due to the claims. I think that, like, I would argue that in this case, you know, I think that a reasonable person could say, yeah, people think that was about Johnny. And then the same reasonable person should probably also be able to say, like, this is why he lost his job. So if you can make those two connections, then you can vote in his favor. And I'm hoping that happens. We'll have to see how Cross works out over the next week, but they're certainly going to have enough time to load up.
And next up today, Elon Musk just got blasted by lunatic leftist journalist and Twitter for its insane bias.
Elon continues his war path, this time confirming left-wing journalist who enjoys the obvious bias that exists on Twitter, where the journalist is essentially calling for people to raise arms and is a clear violation of terms of service, but remains on the platform indefinitely. This is the type of bias. For me, there's data and things that show that right-wing users have a harder time gaining traction on Twitter. Then there's also data that claims to disprove that. One thing that I feel is indisputable is the way that the rules are enforced. I believe that right-wing or conservative users are on far thinner ice than left-wing users are. There are active super soldier Antifa accounts on Twitter, even though their group has been designated as domestic terrorists, okay? They're active, calling for action. We see what happens when they call for action. There's all sorts of insane things that are allowed to happen from left-wing groups that you just would never see exist on the right wing. Well, over the weekend, there's this reporter named Caroline Riley, and she calls for more people to, I'm just going to show you everything. If you're enjoying the content, please take a second to click that red subscribe button down below. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Or if you're watching on Odyssey, Rumble, or BitChute, please subscribe there as well. Left-wing journalists calls for more acts of bad behavior against pro-life groups. This is Caroline Riley. More of this. May these people never know a moment of peace or safety until they rot in the ground, she writes. This was after a building here in Wisconsin, about an hour away from me, was set on fire by, pro-choice activist. You see here, Caroline Riley, reporter for our Rewire News Group, has called for more arson against, you know, a pro-life group, suggested an escalation to even worse behavior. Riley, in her Twitter bio, boasts writing for GQ, The Town and Country, Vulture, Inside Hook, and others, says on her website that she is a, quote, award-winning journalist, and writes about reproductive health, men's fashion, hookups, and more. Her website also says her, quote, scholarly writings on the procedure for young people earned national recognition. Never heard of her, but yeah. The writer retweeted a New York Times article about a pro-life group's headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, being vandalized by Molotovs. More of this. May these people never know a moment of peace and safety until they rot in the ground. Riley's tweets are now protected. Vandals, of course, burned down the building in Wisconsin, the Family Action Office, early Sunday morning. It appears a specific nonprofit that supports pro-life was targeted. And it was targeted by a left-wing group. They had the key thing spray painted on there, 1312. I don't know. Obviously, that's a reference to something. I would say a female probably wrote this. Very good handwriting. Insane. If the procedures aren't safe, then you aren't either. a direct threat. The report confirmed that nobody was injured, thankfully. Julianne Appling, president of the advocacy organization, said, imagine if somebody had been in the office when this happened. They would have been hurt, or maybe worse. Now, this was pointed out here by Cernovich, saying, here you go, Elon. When Twitter employees invariably lie to you about their enforcement policy, maybe they can explain why a verified account was allowed to incite terrible behavior without any care in the world about being banned. It doesn't even occur to this journalist that she would be banned for directly inciting Terry behavior. Zero to fear, as this view is more likely shared by a preponderance of Twitter employees. Now, of course, the Babylon Bee writes, has to wonder if a joke is what it will be that finally gets them banned. Elon Musk actually replied to this, writing, Twitter obviously has a strong left-wing bias. Like I said, my preference is to hew close to the laws of the countries in which Twitter operates. If the citizens want something banned, then pass a law to do so. Otherwise, it should be allowed. Tyler Carditis, CEO of The Blaze, writes, "As for this, you'll be smeared as all sorts of things. Let them screech, stay the course." It's a perfect example of, like, you're literally out here calling for people to do more of this, you know, more of this. It's because they live with zero fear of repercussions, zero fear of any, it's like that Taylor Lorenz chick showing up at people's houses. She doesn't care. She's not worried about anything because, you know, quite frankly, only one side of the aisle seems to have these, you know, insane outbursts where they burn down buildings, millions of dollars in property. If the right was doing that, maybe these people wouldn't feel so brazen, but they're not. And by the way, should I say, neither side should. It's just a very obvious thing. Like the summer of peace, the summer of love that caused billions of dollars in damage was justified, glorified by one side of the political aisle. And it's the same side as the political aisle that writes this kind of stuff. A verified Twitter user who's accepting money for their tweets. By the way, another verified, I have 200,000 followers. I'm not verified, but yeah, this person who's calling for more people to, you know, commit attacks, they're fine. Now this says in this article from The Conversation, Elon Musk says relaxing content rules on Twitter will boost free speech, but research shows otherwise. Let me write an alternative title headline for you. Free speech is bad, actually. When Elon Musk's accepted bid to purchase Twitter has triggered a lot of debate about what it means for the future of the social media platform, which plays an important role in determining the news and information so many people, especially Americans, are exposed to. By the way, again, they're saying the quiet part out loud there, aren't they? They're worried that you're going to hear the truth. They're worried that, you know, you're going to hear maybe unfiltered opinions. Musk said he wants to make Twitter an arena for free speech. It's not clear what that will mean, and his statements have fueled speculation among both supporters and detractors. As a corporation, Twitter can regulate speech on its platform as it chooses. There are bills being considered in the U.S. Congress and by the European Union that address social media regulation, but these are about transparency, accountability, illegal harmful content, and protecting users' rights rather than regulating speech. Oh, you sound so mad about that. Musk's calls for free speech on Twitter focuses on two claims, political bias and excessive moderation. As researchers of online misinformation and manipulation, my colleagues and I here at the Indiana University Observatory on Social Media study the dynamic and impact of Twitter and its bad behavior. To make sense of Musk's statements and the possible outcomes of his acquisitions, let's look at what the research shows. Unfortunately, Twitter and other platforms often inconsistently enforce their policies, so it's easy to find examples supporting one theory or another. A review for the Center of Business and Human Rights at New York University has found that, quote, no reliable evidence in support of the claim of anti-conservative bias by the social media companies, evil labeling the claim itself a form of disinformation. Jeez, I wonder why. A more direct evaluation of political bias by Twitter is difficult because of the complex interactions between people and algorithms. What you admit in your own piece is that the data can be wrapped up, packaged, and presented in any way that fits anybody's particular desired outcome. But the fact of the matter is, quite frankly, that there are just innumerable high-profile examples of right-leaning individuals being banned from your platform. And I can't even name a single mainstream left-winger. I mean, you have the tallies have an account on Twitter. You let the Chinese government have an account on Twitter. You have far leftist super soldiers on Twitter. You have accounts that essentially are putting out information on Supreme Court justices allowed on Twitter. You have, I mean, all of these left-wing accounts that are committing terrible, bad behavior seem to just have unfettered access to Twitter. But some doctor posts an opinion that he doesn't agree with, maybe the mainstream opinion about particular treatments, he's banned. You know, and you know why the mainstream, like, geez, I wonder why the mainstream media is saying, most of Twitter's biased against conservatives, facts say otherwise. Again, I wonder why the mainstream media would be, you know, pushing that narrative. Of course it's biased against conservatives. Of course it is. Like, there's, it's biased in every possible way. And the way that what they allow to trend is manually curated, and what they allow me to see. If they weren't biased, why can't my followers see what I tweet? Why am I shadow banned? Like, I'm literally shadow banned on Twitter. Why? Why do they continue to refuse to verify me, even though I'm a YouTuber with 1.2 million subscribers? I have a viable case for verification because there are imposter accounts. I'm in the media. I've had numerous articles written about me, and they decline it. Yet some left-wing psychopath journalist is verified who has 1,000 followers. I mean, I don't really need to dig deep to find perfect examples of left-wing bias on Twitter, and I'm glad that Elon's calling it out.
And next up, journalists rage after Wordle shuts down. They were hoping that this app would push politics on players.
Everything you love, everything that you enjoy, everything that, you know, provides you any level of escapism is and will always be coveted by those wanting to politicize every little possible thing. I saw this happen to Magic the Gathering, the game I played since 1994. A game I played my entire life became heavily politicized and became zero fun after that because it was just tainted. Even the knitting community has to deal with this. If you think I'm kidding, there are dozens of articles about it. Now, the daily app Wordle. Now, everything I've learned about Wordle has been against my will. I don't play the game, but I don't behoove or I don't judge anyone who wants to play. Look, my wife is on like level 9,000 something on Candy Crush. She's never put a single dollar into the game, and I think her tablet thinks it's 1893, but I don't make fun of her for it. Everybody has their own little mobile games. I mean, I play Raid and Mech Arena and like Ebony, I literally do because I like to just check out on stuff and just relax. Well, Wordle has been kind of this sensational word game where you guess the letters and a lot of people play it. But now, of course, it was purchased by the New York Times. I don't know how the New York Times has any money to be purchasing anything, but since they purchased it, they decided, hey, let's cram whatever the day's heavy political conversation is into the game. New York Times admits that it, quote, changed today's Wordle answer for being too politically charged, but says some players were still shown the original after users complained of two solutions. Now, is it possible that the word was just there and had nothing to do with what's going on in the Supreme Court? Yes, I suppose it is entirely possible. Is it likely that some woke employee at the New York Times or Wordle decided to do it anyway or push it through because of everything going on? Yeah, of course that's possible too. Now, the New York Times had admitted it changed the answer of Monday's Wordle from being too politically charged after users complained of two possible solutions. Time bosses who own the popular word guessing game said they changed the planned May 9th answer from fetus to shine after the original solution was flagged last week. That came after last Monday's leak from the Supreme Court, which was probably planned, at least in my opinion, indicated that they had plans to end Roe v. Wade law. But the New York Times admitted Monday that it was unable to completely remove the original. I'm sure they totally tried. I'm sure they were like, oh man, all we had to do is change the word or move today's word to tomorrow, but we just couldn't do it. Meaning some players are still offer the solution. The paper issued a statement saying some users may see an outdated answer. Wait, are you calling fetuses outdated? That's kind of a bold thing to say. At New York Times Games, we take our role seriously as a place to entertain and escape. And we want Wordle to remain distinct from the news. Oh, do you? Maybe. Hey, if this is actually the case, I bet you the left is outraged. Because of the current Wordle technology, it can be difficult to change words that have already been loaded into the game. When we discovered last week that this particular word would be featured today, we switched it for as many solvers as possible. You won't receive the outdated version if you have refreshed your browser window. But we know that some of you won't do that, and as a result, you'll be asked to solve the outdated puzzle. This is entirely unintentional and a coincidence. It's a coincidence! Today's original answer was loaded into Wordle last year. Is it true? Is it possible? Yeah, I think it's entirely possible that this really was loaded in last year. It's possible. I mean, you see, you know, I just played my last game of Wordle. Tomorrow's Wordle, abort. This goes where I started and my starting word. Wait, what? They aborted it. That's my opening word. WTF, you know, I don't know. Are the left mad? Now they're censoring the dictionary. I don't know. Is it a coincidence? I have a hard time believing that it was a coincidence. I just do. I don't know if that's, you know, I can't prove otherwise, but it sure seems coincidental. The change in answers comes as one week after Politico first released and leaked United States Supreme Court documents decision that they would overturn Roe v. Wade, with Chief Justice John Roberts confirming its authenticity the next day. In the opinion of Justice Samuel Alito, writes, Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. We will hold that Roe and Casey must be overturned. It's time to heed the Constitution and return the issue to the people's elected representatives. Almost immediately after it was released, liberal Democrats took to Twitter to vow to fight against the decision, with Representative Ocasio-Cortez tweeting that Senator Joe Manchin is preventing a vote on codifying the rights into law, while Senator Bernie Sanders suggested ending the filibuster to get it passed. Well, what's interesting is that, you know, when you had a Democratic House, Democratic supermajority, you didn't do anything about it. Joe Biden didn't do anything about it when he was there before he was president. I'm not exactly sure what you want. I mean, am I supposed to ignore history? You know, I think you see that, but the liberal media doesn't care. They're going to use it and run the agenda anyway. Here's Kotaku, a video game website. Wordle removes fetus answer following the attack on abortion rights. Really, again, I don't really understand, you know, nothing is, by the way, official yet. It remained fascinating to watch Wordle, now a cornerstone of the New York Times game section, after being acquired for a low seven-figure deal, which is actually insane, earlier this year, follow the footsteps of every other major game before it. Players devise optimization strategies to maximize their win streaks. Back-end tech issues have invited community backlash. And now the New York Times is trying its hardest to keep Wordical from appearing political. The company started censoring answers and guesses shortly after it took the app over, culling words that ranged from naughty to potentially offensive. According to TryHard Games, which has been tracking these changes, fetus wasn't the only word cut last week. Butch was also taken out of the rotation around the same time. The crossword puzzle is yet another mainstay of the New York Times that has tried to keep apolitical in recent years, despite the ongoing battles and genuinely terrible things happening in the world that make it virtually impossible. Following the decision to remove fetus from Wordle, however, the Times appears to be more concerned that different correct answers once again split the player base more than anything else. So they're mad. They're mad about it. You know, that's where we are. Is like the media's, the left-wing media is mad that Wordle removed it. Do I think that Wordle had this, you know, a year ago? Probably. Do I think it's funny that like the media is blasting them for trying to remain apolitical? Yeah, that's because that's what they do. Like, the media is seething that they removed this, guaranteed. Now, if they would have left it in and said, hey, yeah, we did that on purpose because, you know, we just want to raise awareness, blah, blah, blah. The media would have been bending over backwards to promote it because that's really what they want. You could say like, oh, you know, Kotaku's taking the position here like, well, how could anyone possibly remain apolitical? You know, it's a crossword puzzle. Of course it has to be political. I mean, what do you mean? Of course crossword puzzles are political. It has to be that way. I mean, that's because when you view everything through the lens of politics and things that are, you know, interested in, and things that you want to write about, you know, like these journalists, I think that if the New York Times is really trying to remain apolitical in their games, that is smart. That's what people want. Do I think they will be able to... Do I think the New York Times use their games as another way to get into people's heads and push agendas, though? Yep, I do. I believe the New York Times wanted Wordle because it expands their reach, not because they have any interest in providing fun games for people. And I that's exactly why I don't necessarily suspect that this was an accident at all. But if it wasn't an accident, then they bungled the response to it because they should have just double down on it so the media wouldn't turn on them. What a mess. Everything has to be political because nobody can enjoy anything. That's why I collect NES games.
And next up today, Jeremy discusses lunatic teacher busted by libs of TikTok and fired over TikTok celebrating turning kids.
It's a Monday afternoon. It's getting time to start being a little more aware of where the clock's at in the day. So if you're a first shifter or a second shifter, you're on your way into work. I appreciate you tuning in. Now, a bit of an update. It's a bitter sweet thing when these kind of lunatic teachers get fired. Well, it's really just kind of sweet, I guess. I don't ever really want to celebrate people getting fired for the most part. But I guess when you're a teacher at like this level, you're celebrating essentially turning kids, is how the wording was. You know, I'm okay with you being fired. I'm okay with that. If you were, especially if you work in a public school, you know, private school, you know, you're not government funded. I have less of a vested interest in it. You know, people who are choosing to put their kids in there, they have more of an interest in it. But the Libs of TikTok account, and this is why, you know, there was such a massive push to, you know, kind of silence it, remove them, apply pressure, threaten them. All these teachers. Now, again, I truly believe that this is a very small percentage of the teaching pool and that most teachers truly love their job and their students and just want the best for them. I know you might be rolling your eyes, calling me, you know, positive Patty or whatever, but that's just how I feel. I guess the alternative would be too dire. Just needed a little coffee there. But on May 6th, there was a video released by Libs of TikTok a teacher. I don't know what it is about these teachers that feel like they have to put this stuff on TikTok. You know, people are watching, and like, I hope they keep putting it on TikTok. I hope they keep telling us what they're doing. I hope they keep telling us, you know, what their plans are, and keep mocking us, because there's a penalty for that. This says this video got 1.5 million views. And as a quote from the teacher said, a lot of them, the students, are queer because I'm queer.
My kids from last year are now in fifth grade, and they come visit me almost every day after school. And a lot of them are queer because I am queer. And so, and they figured it out. And so I've become their safe space. And today.
Now, maybe she's saying a lot of the students that visit her all also happen to be that. I don't know if she's necessarily implying that she turned them or inspired them or whatever the case may be. But you're, what, how old are you in, you're in fifth grade? Like, I don't know. 10? Is that right? I'm guessing 10 or 11, maybe? Why are they visiting this teacher after school? Why is this teacher doing any of this stuff? It seems a little creepy.
Hey, they found my guess who. And they started playing guess who, but they didn't play it the normal way. How did they play it? They used things like, this person looks like a lesbian baddie who's going to come over and make you dinner. Well, which one of these characters is going to be, is a lesbian baddie that's going to come over and make you dinner? Oh, Olivia is? Oh, great.
What? First of all, is that, did she do a racism? I think she did a racism there.
Which character just looks gay? Well, meet Mike. These kids, I'm so happy that they are.
By the way, if straight kids said that, they'd be called all sorts of horrible things.
Are figuring out who they are and that they're happy with who they are and that they found a safe place. But man, I could never imagine being in fifth grade saying these things out loud, even though I know they're all okay. I grew up super religious where nothing was okay. And so seeing this happen, I'm like, ah, but I'm also like, yay, but ah.
So if I'm being charitable here, okay, this is a teacher who happens to be a member of the LGBTQ community and is trying to be like supportive of her students. I don't inherently think that that's a bad thing. Where you get into trouble, where the line is kind of blurred, is when these teachers are like, I don't know, trying to lean their kids one way or the other, or hide things from their parents. Or there was that one teacher that was like, oh, I have a transformation closet so that the kids can come here and change into girls' clothes if they want. Like, no, you can't do that. You're not their parent. You don't have more right to their kid than their parents do. And this teacher ends up getting fired. And this is just one of two or three high profile firings this week. Late Friday, we became aware of a concerning video posted to social media by one of our teachers. In the video, the teacher describes several inappropriate conversations with former students. The employee has been placed on administrative leave pending a thorough investigation. Our teachers are expected to comport themselves with the highest degree of professionalism. Behavior that is unprofessional, which I would say is exhibited here, is in violation of state code or violates the trust placed in us by the families of the Renaissance Academy, will not be tolerated. Now, a lot of people pointing out, well, administrative leave, you mean paid vacation? Sure, that could be the case. It could be. But it's like, you know, you should be teaching them about math and, you know, and friendship. And you see this here. Another teacher has been put on administrative leave over a TikTok video. The video was first uncovered by Popular Libs of TikTok account, a Twitter account that has grown more popular after a failed attempt by the Washington Post journalismers to have the account shut down. In a video, the unnamed teacher bragged about encouraging students to be, quote, queer because she was. I don't know if that's a fair representation of what she said there. I think that the conversation she's had is inappropriate, but I don't think that's what she's saying. I think she's saying She was open about her orientation, which is a conversation that teachers shouldn't be having with elementary schoolers. Let's start there. And because of the her orientation or her whatever, then these students who also identify that way identify with her and show up in her classroom. I believe that's what she said. But the important thing is she's having conversations about her bedroom activities or whatever with students. Not okay. She's fostering these weird, like, gay club, LGBTQ club with students, which is not what teachers are supposed to be doing. And again, young students. I think it's important that we don't, you know, that we're careful about, you know, misrepresenting. I'm not saying that Brodigan is 100% wrong here. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it. But I think that there are a lot of, like, ill-willed teachers that deserve to get fired. I just want to be careful that we don't, like, witch hunt anybody who talks about this stuff. Now, I would argue that the fact that she's had conversations about her orientation and stuff like that with her students, that's not something that really needs to be happening. But, you know, if we look at another teacher in Florida art teacher fired after telling her students about her orientation. She is pan, apparently. And again, no reason to be talking about that with your kids. The Florida teacher claimed she was fired for discussing her status with middle school students, whom she then asked to draw pictures representing their own orientations. Oh, maybe it was the second part of that. Maybe don't come across like some weird groomer. Like, maybe it was that part. Scott, who is married to a man, tells the kids at the middle school then created flags representing their own gender identities, ranging from trans and non-binary to gay. The first year teacher posted the creations on the classroom door before administrators told her to take them down. They said it would be in her best interest if you got rid of them now, she told NBC. Scott said she crumpled up the pictures and put them in the trash. Lee school district officials said some students understood her explanation, while others were left confused. This is why you don't have the conversation with other people's kids. It's not your position to. It's not your right to kind of thrust this upon them in an environment where some people may be ready for it and some people may not. And also, it's art class. It's not your personal, like, soapbox. So many of these, you know, teachers that end up getting outed by libs of TikTok, they end up with, like, they always get caught on TikTok because they're obsessed with validation. Obsessed with it. I don't know, like, this, I'm nervous about this representation again, because I don't think that's what she said.
Last year, now in fifth grade, and they come visit me almost every day after school, and a lot of them are queer because I am queer, and so, and they figured it out, and so I've become their safe space.
Now, maybe I'm wrong. I guess I could see how it's interpreted that way, that, like, a lot of them are queer because I'm queer. I guess I'm trying to take things, like, from the least sad position, like the least doom and gloom. I was thinking when I heard it first that she's just saying, oh, they're visiting me because I'm also queer and they feel safe. But if she's like saying, oh, they are because I am, that's also weird. So phrasing is a thing. You see Ali Beth Stuckey writing, the power suggestion is nearly irresistible for kids. Teachers like this know this and use it to their ideological advantage. John Gesser writes, it's called grooming. Mike Mason looks, look how excited she is talking about this kind of stuff with fourth graders. All I see here are red flags. Yeah, probably not untrue.
And last up, BLM founder finally admits what we all know.
We all knew once more information came out about these organizations that were all essentially race grifting over the past year, that it was all going to be money that was going to disappear. It was never going to make it into the communities that it was supposed to help, and that it was going to just enrich the people at the very top. we knew this in terms of all the people donating money to this BLM organization. This is also true for a lot of, you know, long-standing charities too. There are websites that rate charities and their watchdogs. It's like very difficult nowadays, actually, when you're raising money to like figure out, like, are they legit? A lot of these like huge charities, UNICEF, that size and things like that, like usually like 2 to 3 pennies out of every dollar make it to the cause. You had all this money flowing in to this BLM organization. And to be clear, I'm talking about the organization. I kept thinking to myself, wouldn't you do much better shopping, you know, in Black communities or buying from Black owned businesses, these type of things, if you wanted to help the Black community, rather than pouring money into like a black hole, pun unintended, with no oversight, no checks and balances, just to what, resolve your white guilt or something like that. Well, now we're finding out that the person at the top of it, her name's Patrice Cullors, has been enriching herself greatly at the expense. And I think it's great. All these idiots that in Hollywood that sent all their money, good. Spend it. Buy mansions. Buy large mansions. I'm fine with it. And when you poke around and you say, well, where is this money going? Then they just say, well, you're being racist. BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors slammed a report by New York Magazine detailing the organization's purchase of a swanky $6 million Southern California home, claiming the story was, of course, racist. The 6,500 square foot mansion features more than 6 bedrooms and baths and was secretly bought with BLM donation funds. The magazine reported, and the Post later confirmed, the luxurious property once hosted Humphrey Bogart and Marilyn Monroe as house guests and comes complete with a soundstage, music studio, pool, and a 2-bedroom guest house. Why BLM needs this? I don't know. $5.8 million could have done a lot. Could have set up a lot of scholarship money. Could have set up a lot of apprenticeships. It was never about helping the Black community. It never was. Just like all these idiot suburban white kids showing up in Kenosha and burning it down. They didn't care about Black people. They never did. Cullors called the article about the massive home a despicable abuse of the platform and intended to provide information to the public. The fact that a reputable publication would allow a reporter with a proven and very public bias against me and other Black leaders to write a piece filled with misinformation, innuendo, and incendiary opinions is disheartening and unacceptable, she wrote. Do you think she ever provided the receipts, my friends? No, she did not. The article revealed that the 7-bedroom residence was purchased by Dwayne Pascal 2 weeks after BLM GNF received a $66.5 million in cash injection from its financial sponsor. Pascal is the financial manager for an LLC operated by Cullors and her spouse, Janaya Khan, Janaya and Patrice Consulting. Do you have any idea how much money they're just funneling away from this? Can't criticize it, though. This is why, and by the way, if there was, obviously BLM is, in my opinion, not very different from a lot of these other charities that pop up around causes. Look at how much money, like, remember when the Houston, every time there's like a natural disaster, everybody and their uncle are raising money. And very little of that actually ever gets to the people that need it. Ownership was transferred within a week to an LLC in Delaware, ensuring the property's owner wouldn't be disclosed. Oh, I wonder why you'd hide that. And the purchase of the nearly $6 million home had not previously been reported, the magazine claimed. BLM officials tried to keep its existence a secret from members of the media looking into the transaction. Cullors recorded a video last June outside the home to mark the first anniversary of St. Floyd, and she remarked that she was in survival mode. After the Post's exclusive reporting, last April revealed her purchase of 4 other high-end homes in the United States for $3.2 million. So now she spent $10 million on homes. what's happening to me in our movement is both racist and based on my gender, Colors wrote regarding the reporting on her purchases. What's happening to me is not about accountability or healing. It's about destroying my life. I don't know. I have a feeling black folks are asking, and I'm sure other black women as well, probably asking a few questions about why you're spending their money in this fashion. She said the reason the purchase wasn't announced, which she claims was bought to be a safe space for black people, required repairs and renovations. That's why they didn't announce it. What? You need to have a $6 million mansion to feel safe? She goes on to say she's never misappropriated funds, a claim the article does not accuse her of. She also said scrutiny she is facing is unfair and unjust. Hey, I didn't give you any money. I'm sure that the people that did give you the money are probably pretty pissed off, though. This after BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors chairs Dark Money nonprofit received $2.5 million from a woke Silicon Valley fund whose previous donors included Netflix. Oh, Netflix co-founder Reed Hastings, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jack Dorsey. A Dark Money nonprofit run by one of BLM's founders received $2.5 million in donations from a Silicon Valley foundation in 2020, a tax filing showed. Tax firms show that Dignity and Power Now, an LA-based agency headed by Patrice Cullors, secured $4.2 million in donations in 2020. The bulk sum of that coming from a single Silicon Valley foundation, a multi-billion-dollar fund based in the Bay Area. The firm, which bills itself as a donor-advised community foundation serving the Silicon Valley region, received $2.1 billion in contributions alone. And now BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors admits using $6 million mansion for her own parties. What a coincidence. Who could have foreseen this? I wonder if black folks from, I don't know where they bought this. Somewhere in the California area, they started showing up and say, hey, I'm looking for a safe space to take a swim. I want to go in your pool. Do you think Patrice Cullors would let them in? I don't know. All the properties she bought seem to be in white neighborhoods. That's what other people are saying. That's not what I'm saying. The second she had money, she got up out of the black neighborhood she claims to represent and is living in the whitest of white neighborhoods in California. Like, shockingly white. Blindingly white. Like, white on rice in a paper plate in a snowstorm white. 99.9997% white. That's where Patrice Cullors bought her home. BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors has admitted to throwing two parties at the organization's swanky $6 million mansion, despite previously suggesting she'd never use the property for personal gain. The 38-year-old told the Associated Press on Monday that she hosted her son's birthday party there and a gathering to celebrate President Biden's inauguration at the six-bedroom property earlier this year. I thought this was to serve as a meeting place, a venue, and campus. That's what you told everybody. But what you're actually doing is you're just using this as just another one of your three or four homes. She was seeking refuge at the property because she'd been receiving mean words. During that time, she said that she also hosted a Biden inauguration party for about 15 people, including local BLM chapter members and other prominent supporters of the organization. Cullors said she also threw a private birthday party for her son in March 2021, and she intended to pay a rental fee to BLM. I'm sure she intended to pay one, but just hadn't gotten around to it yet. They were still crunching the numbers. I'm sure as soon as they figure it out, she's going to write a check to BLM with money she got paid from BLM. Somehow, she'll turn it into a way to make more money. I said it at the time, and I'll say it again. You have a big mansion, you got tennis courts, it looks like, you got a huge in-ground pool. Must be nice. It looks like she is just in survival mode there, huh? She might have to go to one of her other four multi-million dollar homes. What a joke. And no one's going to care about this. No one's going to report on this. The black community's not going to be mad about this. I don't know why they wouldn't be. This woman has enriched herself to the tune of somewhere $10 to $20 million. That was a lot of money that could have went to the communities. We'll see. Hope you enjoyed this video. We'll talk to you again real soon.